This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Criticizing President-elect Donald Trump's choice of Steve Bannon as White House chief strategist. The Anti-Defamation League writing this, quote, "It is a sad day when a man who presided over the premier website of the alt-right, a loose-knit group of white nationalists and unabashed anti-Semites and racists, is slated to be a senior staff member in the People's House." So, do these harsh claims have any validity? Here to weigh in is the president of the Zionist Organization of America, Morton Klein. Morton, you've heard the speculation, the rumors, the state. What are your thoughts?
Look, I'm the head of the oldest pro-Israel group in the United States, the ZOA, Zionist Organization of America. I'm a child of Holocaust survivors who lost virtually my whole family to vicious anti-Semitism and hatred during the Holocaust. This is, ADL is absolutely ridiculous. You know, in the 50s and 60s, when hospitals and law firms were anti-Semitic, they wouldn't hire Jews to work there. Steve Bannon has a number of Orthodox Jews who wear yarmulkes all day long working for him. He has homosexuals working for him, gay people. Anti-Semites wouldn't do that. And when we fought campus anti-Semitism at City College, Steve Bannon had his reporters calling City College repeatedly, calling Governor Cuomo repeatedly, how are you going to fight this anti-Semitism? Do something about it. In fact, here's an article from his website, BDS responsible for spike in anti-Semitism. Here's an article about swastikas being drawn in New York City schools. An anti-Semite would not highlight such things. And when it comes to Israel, every article about Israel is positive and supportive. The articles about the Palestinian Authority, they expose the fact that the Palestinian Authority promotes hatred and violence against
right.
Jews, names schools and streets against Jews. This guy is the opposite of an anti-Semite. He's a strong supporter of Israel and a Zionist, and I find the ADL a disgrace, and we've asked him to apologize for this disgraceful character assassination.
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, Jeff Benedict, who I know quite well, who's written various books, co-author, said he used to work over at Breitbart and left, but he says he's never had a problem with him, and he happens to be Jewish. Steve Bannon also, I guess people, some of his critics are referring to the fact that some stuff came out in his divorce proceedings that have not been verified. I want to bring up, this is another prone point, that Donald Trump has a son-in-law who's Jewish and now has a daughter who converted to Judaism. If the son-in-law is playing such a prominent role in the campaign, which turned out to be a victorious one, why would he ever promote the hiring of Steve Bannon in the primary process, in the electoral process, and now in the White House process?
You're exactly right. His son-in-law is an Orthodox Jew. As is his daughter now, and the people around him are the most pro-Israel people I've ever seen in any administration. Mike Pence, Rudy Giuliani, Newt Gingrich, Mike Huckabee, Sheldon Adelson, an ardent Zionist, has given Trump $100 million. Do you think they would tolerate an anti-Semite amongst them? It's completely absurd. And even Alan Dershowitz, the liberal Democrat, supporter of Obama, has come out yesterday defending Bannon, saying this is an outrage, this is not anti-Semitism, they're demeaning, ADL is demeaning the word of anti-Semitism by accusing this pro-Israel, pro-Jewish man of this nonsense.
Senator Bernie Sanders, who's as pro-Jewish as any Jewish person in the who is very challenging to Israel on a regular basis, says that he wants the president-elect to take Steve Bannon out of the mix. I don't see that really happening, more. And also, you do have a three-month trial run. When he came aboard, is there anything anti-Semitic about the Trump run for the presidency, which ultimately won, culminated in him winning?
On the contrary, his platform is the most pro-Israel, the most pro-Israel platform of any party in history. Why would he bring on an anti-Semite who wouldn't want to implement such a platform? This is all partisan politics. This is all simply Democrats who want to harm the Republican Party
right.
and ruin Trump's credibility. It's all about politics because they haven't said a word about Keith Ellison, who's up for being the head of the Democratic National Committee, a man who was called Israel an apartheid state. Said we shouldn't kill leaders of terrorists because they want to be martyrs. A man who has taken money from Muslim Brotherhood-affiliated people, who has taken money from CARE, who won't even condemn Hamas by name, and has spoken to Muslim Brotherhood-affiliated people.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit later because it looks like he's going to be the next DNC chair. Morton Klein, thanks so much.
Will the government protect your family from Iran and North Korea's newest weapon, EMP? We buy guns to protect ourselves, home, health, and car insurance for accidents. Maybe you also have food storage. But how would you keep your refrigerator running in a long-term EMP blackout? Using tested military designs, the Solark EMP-hardened solar generator protects and powers your critical appliances for years without burying items underground or wrapping them in aluminum foil. Unlike other preps, Solark is used every day to help offset your electric bill automatically. Visit PortableSolarLLC.com to learn how easily expandable the system is. Solark is the most affordable and powerful solution on the market. The whole system even fits in the back of a pickup or SUV and can install in less than an hour. See for yourself why Solark beats other off-grid systems at PortableSolarLLC.com. Don't wait for the government. Go to PortableSolarLLC.com to learn why Solark is energy insurance for your family.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Neil Martinez live.
Well, hello, America. Good to have you along with us. The question is, what would those who wrote, signed, and fought for the Declaration of Independence have fought on this year's presidential election? What exactly were the principles embodied in the Declaration that is so often quoted by politicians? In his new book, The Heart of the Declaration, Yale University professor Steven Pinkus argues that the bulk of the Declaration is a discussion of policy. And we're going to break that down in just a moment. But first, welcome, Professor. Good to have you here with us on Bill Martinez Live.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, good. Well, this is so important in terms of filtering out this discussion, because this is part of the challenge when you have emotions flying. I say emotions are good. They're good motivators. But after it's all said and done, we have to pause for just a moment and think about what the discussion involved and what were we trying to effect here.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I mean, I think at moments of political change, whether just a sort of normal electoral change or something like what happened on Tuesday, what the Washington Post called a seismic political change, mm-hmm. I think the best thing that we can all do is go back to first principles. I mean, actually go back and think about what this country is all about, and no better place to start than with our founding document, the Declaration of Independence.
Exactly. You know, Professor, many times I talk about in terms of business, you know, when business is rolling along, they're doing well, and then sometimes there's a downturn. I mean, they think they're following, you know, the right principles, everything's rolling, but the fruit of their efforts are not there. You know, all of a sudden they're just off a certain number of millions of dollars, employees are not happy, things go on. And a prudent leader and businessman will stop and go back to first principles and say, where did we miss it? What did we embody that took us on a detour that got us away from the successful company that we once were, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And I see this in the same case of this country. We've been saying, hey, we needed to stop, go back, and figure out where we made a hard left along the way. I just say hard left from direct. It could be hard right. But my thinking was, where did we make a hard left, and where are we missing the point here? So I think what happened here, you know, with this last election is a great time for this country to reconnect itself with, as you say, first principles, the Declaration of Independence.
Absolutely. No, I think that's absolutely right. One of the things that I think it's really important to read, that to go back to the Declaration of Independence, and I think it's, one of the points that I try to make is that it's a document that is important for us to read straight through. You know, I think we all know, or, you know, every American school child knows the clauses about equality. And I think those philosophical principles are incredibly valuable. But the bulk of the Declaration is actually talking about policies, what the British government, after George III came to the throne in 1760, what it did to make life intolerable for Americans. And to my mind, a lot of those complaints were actually economic complaints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I had suggested that maybe we should write up in the modern era our own grievances with the current government, that it was ripe to do so, you know, so that it was real clear, not only for the leadership, but the voter politic to get behind this, because this is part of the challenge with emotions. Emotions go all over the place, but if there's going to be effectual change, there needs to be a target, and our founding fathers wisely understood this, and this is why they enumerated such, not only to the king, but their own constituency, as well as the world at large, to understand, hey, something new was coming around the corner here, and here's all the reasons for it, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the Declaration of Independence was a public document which not only was meant to persuade, you know, North Americans why they should sever their connection with the British Empire, but also to convince foreign polities, the French, the Spanish, the Dutch, that what the Americans were creating was a state with whom you could do business. And I mean business
exactly.
Quite literally, since one of the aims, one of the immediate aims of the founders was to open up trade with France and Spain, and signing bilateral trade agreements.
Exactly, and be able to do so without threatening their relationship with the British, right?
Well, so, I mean, the British, I mean, at this point, at the point of the Declaration of Independence, they thought things were, you know, the relationship with Britain had soured. But I think it's absolutely right. I mean, when the First Continental Congress was called in 1774, what British Americans, what patriots wanted was not so much independence. They wanted to bring down in a parliamentary way, the Prime Minister of Great Britain. They didn't want to overthrow him. They wanted him to be turned out electorally, and so they tried to use economic pressure through non-importation agreements, non-exportation agreements, to bring down Lord North's government, who was the Prime Minister of Great Britain. And what they hoped would happen was that would significantly improve economic relations between Britain and North America. And I should say, make it clear that from the perspective of the founders, before 1760, the British Empire was an incredibly desirable thing. For most Americans were well aware that the British Empire, unlike the French and the Spanish empires, did quite a lot to promote the prosperity of the North American colonies. So, from the Spanish Empire, they simply seized silver from Mexico and from Peru. I mean, that was the heart of the relationship. The British Empire provided bounties or subsidies for the development of agriculture and commerce in British North America. They provided subsidies to populate British North America, and they did everything they could to open up trade between British North America and Spanish America, that is to say Mexico, Peru, etc., and the French Caribbean. And all of that came to an end in 1760. The founders wanted very much to open up trade, and in fact, one of the clauses of the Declaration of Independence blames George III for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. And Benjamin Franklin, one of the Committee of Five who wrote the Declaration of Independence, glossed that passage and said, what we want is a free commerce with all the rest of the world.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and when you think about where the United States was initially in its founding and how, you know, to your point, they relied on England. I mean, their hearts were still tied to this nation. Yes, we talk about, you know, the pilgrims and, and their profession of faith and why they came to the United States and that sort of thing. But you had other former patriots, you can call them expats if you want, to the crown that were here saying, hey, look, we just really don't want to let go of this. I mean, after all, we're talking, you know, the most powerful country on the planet, a military force. But then they weren't even thinking about military. They didn't even think about getting there. It was just, hey, do we want to let go of this relationship? Is there a way that we can find some common ground here? But through the process, then it became inevitable that they, you know, we had to, take the next step.
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. And I think one of the things that one of the points of my book is that we too often forget that every single one of the founders, before they became Americans, were British Americans. And they thought of themselves very much as British subjects. And in fact, most of them celebrated the great achievements of the British Empire until quite late in the game. And I think even somebody like Thomas Jefferson in 1774 very much hoped there was a path to reconciliation.
Okay. And Professor, we got to leave it right there for just a moment. Go to break. Okay. We'll be right back as our...
If you or someone you care about loves outdoor adventure, then check out slingbow.com for some unique holiday gift ideas. That's slingbow.com, where we have some innovative new products for the archer, hunter, or bow fishing enthusiast in your family. Now through January, use the promo code HOLIDAY to get free shipping in the U.S. or Canada. And from all of us at Slingbow Industries, have a safe, joyous, and peaceful holiday season.
Winter has just begun, and are you already tired of being cold? How would you like to never be cold again? This is Dale with Fortress Clothing, and I'm here to tell you, you will never be cold again with Fortress. If you're tired of freezing your butt off, elk hunting, sitting in a tree stand, deer hunting, winter camping, fishing, ice fishing, no longer fear the cold. If you snowmobile, ski, snowboard, get Fortress. Sledding with the kids, shoveling the walks, shopping, or if you or your spouse get cold feet at home, get Fortress. If you're stuck outside working in the cold or find yourself in an emergency situation, get our winter bug out bag and you will never be cold again. Fortress is the answer, so quit complaining and go to fortressclothing.com. It's a mid-layer garment that goes with anything you want to wear. Enter coupon code radio and get 20% off any item. Go now while we still have inventory. FortressClothing.com.
Today, living in the United States means that your online privacy is at risk. Regaining that privacy means going abroad. Privacy Abroad offers secure online privacy because our servers are located in Switzerland, a safe haven for digital communications. As a law-abiding citizen, you have nothing to hide, but you certainly have something to lose. Regain your Fourth Amendment rights and your peace of mind. Go to patriot.privacyabroad.com now. That's patriot.privacyabroad.com.
Did you know your car can be hacked just like your computer or phone? Hackers can hijack the signal of your own key fob to burglarize your vehicle in seconds. The Black Hole Faraday Key Fob Bag is a signal impenetrable shield that stops these hacks in their tracks. Protect one of your most valuable assets. Go to hackproofbag.com. That's hackproofbag.com. And use promo code radio to get 20% off. Or call 805-222-4584. 805-222-4584.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Injury Help Desk is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention heartburn drug users. If you or a loved one has taken Nexium, Prevacid, or Prilosec to treat heartburn, acid reflux, or indigestion, and suffered serious kidney damage, chronic kidney disease, or kidney failure, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Studies from the JAMA Internal Medicine indicate a significant increased risk of acute and chronic kidney disease from taking proton pump inhibitors. If you or a loved one was diagnosed with kidney failure or chronic kidney disease after taking Nexium, Prevacid, or Prilosec to treat heartburn, acid reflux, or indigestion, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk now. You may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Call 800-225-8944. That's 800-225-8944. Again, 800-225-8944. Call now.
ProPure Water Filters, making water great again. Taste and feel the difference with state-of-the-art filter technology. Pro 1 G2.0 and Pro Max filters are independent lab-tested to NSF standards. Choose from gravity, countertop, pitcher, shower, and inline filtration products. There's a ProPure for you. Buy risk-free today. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
America
19 after the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here. Our conversation with Yale University professor Steven Pinkus continues, talking about his book, The Heart of the Declaration. Professor, I apologize for cutting you off. We had to go to break here earlier, and I wanted to give you a chance to finish your thought in terms of the mindset of, you know, those in the New America and this kind of mixed emotion that they had regarding the future of the Americas and, you know, their loyalties toward the British Crown.
No, absolutely. I mean, the vast majority of British Americans wanted to renegotiate the terms of the relationship with the British Empire. They wanted to stay within the British Empire. And as I said, Thomas Jefferson in 1774 very much wanted to use the means of the First Continental Congress to put pressure on the British, not to gain independence, but to gain imperial reform or form of governance. And I think emotionally, the vast majority of British Americans were extremely happy to be British subjects. They were just very unhappy with the economic policies that the government had been pursuing for the past decade or so. So I think it was with a very heavy heart that a number of people moved towards independence. And I think even after the Battle of Lexington conquered in April 1775, many of the founders were still hoping against hope for reconciliation. And it was only people like John Adams and Samuel Adams who sort of persuaded the majority that it was a false hope at that point, and they needed to do some.
For the sake of recall and clarification, what killed that deal? Was there any one thing that killed that deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think the sort of key moment, the end of the possibility of reconciliation happened really in 1774 and 1775, when members of the British government were so outraged at the protests in places like Boston, but also up and down the seaboard, but they tended the eastern seaboard, they tended to focus on Boston for you know, having rioted against their various acts. And George III in October 1775, in full Parliament, basically, I mean, it's the king's speech. It wasn't, he actually didn't deliver the speech, but in his name, the Prime Minister said, basically, the North American colonies are de facto independent because they're not recognizing our rule, and we now have to reconquer them. Once it became clear that made it very difficult for anybody in North America to really imagine the possibility of a negotiated deal that would be acceptable to most people.
It's kind of a life and death deal. They sent in the military and said, go
That's
ahead,
right.
Let's squash, we're going to squash this rebellion, is what they said, right?
Right, that's exactly right. And you know, and then they said, and once we've done that, then we'll negotiate. And obviously for most North Americans, they felt that that kind of a negotiation, they wouldn't get a particularly good deal.
They were going to lose all kinds of leverage here. You know, you sense even with the signers of the Declaration of Independence, Professor, that, wow, I mean, you're talking, they really signed their death sentence in signing this thing. I mean, this was an absolute act of treason. And so it wasn't like one of these things you just sign your name, even though John Hancock in a very large form you know, wrote his name. I mean, those men that wrote their name on the Declaration of Independence realized that they were sealing their fate. There was no turning back.
Oh, absolutely. And there's no question that they knew the gravity of the situation. I mean, somebody like, you know, Benjamin Franklin, who, you know, had spent a good part of his life in London and traveling throughout England, who had lots of close personal friends in England. I mean, his letters, you know, basically say, because, you know, you're compelled, because you're living in England, to support the government that's in power there, and I'm compelled to support, you know, to follow the Second Continental Congress, we can no longer be friends, or at least temporarily. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was a heart-wrenching, I mean, ripping apart close friendships, dividing families. It was a heart-wrenching situation, and obviously the founders knew that they were taking a huge risk in what they were doing.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and that's why I think one of the things that's really important to realize is because the situation had deteriorated such, it's why at the end of the declaration, it's so important to realize that the last few lines of the declaration were about creating a new government. It wasn't just breaking with Britain. It was very much creating a new government that could do the things that the British government ceased to be able to do. And that's why it's really important that in the Declaration of Independence, it says, the founders say that they're creating a government that would establish commerce. That is to say, would be, and I think from the beginning, getting the economy going was a central concern.
Interesting that here we are in 2016, and what are we talking about? Betrayed in commerce once again. It's like, the recurring theme song of where there is trade, and as I had in a previous discussion, this is several years back with then Governor Huckabee, was that when does, free trade become unfair trade?
Well, absolutely. And I guess, can I just sort of highlight a point which you made, which I completely agree with? That is to say, the situation of the founders was not so dissimilar from ours today. We tend to think of them as a distant set of people, people who wore funny wigs and funny hats. But the issues that they were facing were very close to ours. And let me just sort of highlight one of them that I talk about in the book. And that is, in the 18th century, the biggest issue facing governments, the British government, the French government, the Spanish government, was the issue of sovereign debt, of the government having, spent a huge amount of money and how to pay back that debt. Mm-hmm. And there was a huge debate in the 18th century on both sides of the Atlantic about what the British government should do. George III and his ministers, first George Grenville and then Lord North, thought they should stop spending money on the colonies because it was expensive. They should just save money in that way. They should tax the colonies because the colonies, not having representation in Parliament, couldn't speak back. And their opponents on both sides of the Atlantic, including the former Prime Minister William Pitt the Elder, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, etc., George Washington really prominently said, no, the British government, the most dynamic part of the British economy were the colonies, and so what they should do is, instead of taxing the colonies directly, they should, in fact, subsidize the development of growth and infrastructure in the colonies. So that debate about, how to deal with a debt crisis strikes me as incredibly familiar.
Exactly.
And it's just their problem was our problem.
Mm-hmm. And here we are. And so how are we going to attack that once again? And we know at the very heart of it is productivity. Back then, it was a new frontier. You had it wide open. Here's the opportunity for you abounding. And here we are. And once again, I believe we're in a position to experience a newfound opportunity of production, some that has been kind of held back because of the last couple of decades with government intervention, I believe regulations, and you've got this pent up, productive potential that's just sitting there waiting to get expressed. And I think we can take the lid off. We're going to explode and we're going to have a very exciting couple of years ahead.
Well, that's entirely possible. And I guess I want to say that one of the issues that was very close to the founders is one issue which I think is one of the few issues which would receive bipartisan support today.
And I'm going to let you wrap up our interview on this thought here. Okay, Professor?
Okay, sure.
Okay.
So the founders, in the Declaration of Independence, when the founders talked about establishing commerce, what they meant first and foremost was infrastructure. That the British government had stopped developing infrastructure in North America, building roads, bridges, harbors, et cetera, et cetera. And it strikes me that on both sides of the aisle, this is a major issue. And I think President Trump's, commitment, or President-elect Trump's commitment to building up infrastructure is the one thing which should be of no controversy, because I think that is so close to the heart of the founders' ideas, that you need infrastructure to get the economy rolling, to make America great in the
first place. Exactly. Yale University Professor Steven Pinkus, his book, The Heart of the Declaration. It is linked on our website and available at all the usual places. Professor, thank you so much.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-765-1480 or go to web.com/radio. That's 800-765-1480.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
My computer is so slow, it's making me crazy.
I used to have that problem.
Did you quit using a computer, or did you buy a new one?
No, I called Geeks On Site. They made an appointment to visit my home and showed up the same day.
You mean they didn't ask you to bring your computer to a shop? That's what happened when I called a support company.
Geeks On Site can go to your home or business or even repair your computer online. They have 24/7 emergency service.
If you're having problems with your PC or Mac, call Geeks On Site. 1-800-591-1682. Our friendly certified computer repair experts are available 24/7. Call now for a free diagnosis. 1-800-591-1682. Data recovery, virus removal, and maintenance for all laptops, desktops, printers, and networks. That's Geeks On Site for friendly certified computer repair experts available 24/7 over the phone or in your home or business. Just call 1-800-591-1682. That's 1-800-591-1682. 1-800-591-1682.
All right, guys, we're ready for our four-season sunroom, and Daddy's gonna get a rec room with refreshments.
Oh, no, we'll be sleeping under the stars.
Mom, what about the one with, you know, the fun?
Nice try, little bro. It's a gym. My gym.
Hey, Grandma's getting her Four Seasons garden room. Weather tight and still like being outdoors.
Maybe a living room. Oh, no, wait, a family hub.
Yeah!
No matter what the budget, the season, or the climate, Four Season Sunrooms let you and your family enjoy the outdoors inside. Call now to hear more about these great offers from the premier manufacturer of sunrooms since 1975.
More reasons for Four Seasons now.
To find out more, call toll-free 800-848-6333. That's 800-848-6333.
Welcome back, America. Bill Martinez here. It's always great to have you along with us as we continue to stay committed to pursue the truth no matter where it leads. And these days, we've been pursuing the face of mercy. And we're honored to have with us Sister Gaudia Skaz, who was born in Warsaw, Poland, joined the congregation of Our Lady of Mercy in 2005 after graduating the Academy of Fine Arts in Warsaw. Sister's been working for 5 years in the Faustinum Association, spreading the message of mercy at the Shrine of Divine Mercy in Krakow, as well as in other countries. Sister, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Hi, thank you for such a beautiful welcome. I'm very, very well, very happy to be with you at this very moment.
Yes, well, great to have you with us to talk about this, you know, incredible year and this special documentary that is going to be a great way to bring a conclusion to the face of mercy. It doesn't mean that we stop being merciful. It's only the celebration of it to remind us that mercy is something we can be very grateful for, right?
Yes, in fact, I must tell you that the last year, the Great Jubilee of Mercy, for me personally, it was, first of all, of course, time of great joy that everyone is talking about mercy and starting to reflect on mercy, on the goodness of God, but also on how can we imitate him, how can we be better people towards each other in our lives. But I must say that it seems to me that we just began, you know, the adventure, the journey, so that the year was to awaken the enthusiasm and the curiosity in us. And now we will really start to going deeper and deeper and more in the practice of our lives.
Well, sister, if there was ever a time we needed it, not only here in the United States, dare I say around the world, we need to come in real connection and understanding of the face of mercy, who Jesus Christ is, what the Father has given us, and how he has extended mercy to his creation, don't we?
Oh, very much so. I truly believe that without getting to know him as he really is, so the merciful Father, we make ourselves and our lives and the lives of people surrounding us really miserable. So we are people without hope. We are depressed, or we are very anxious. We are angry. You know, we bear so many negative emotions in us and, you know, lack of perspective for the future. And with that belief, that faith in the mercy of God, and real encounter him in our lives. So experiencing this, that he really is like the scripture says. So he is so merciful that thousands of millions of people throughout the ages were amazed by his goodness. So now it also gives me hope that also in my life, no matter how difficult it might be, there is hope.
Right.
And it all, one day I will see that even the difficult events, it makes sense. It all makes sense. Just like the Good Friday, the crucifixion of Christ, so difficult for so many people. Later on, with the perspective, they see how amazingly important was that. And now, yes, we rejoice with the fruits of his passion, right, and resurrection.
Amen. Amen. Well, sister, some people would define mercy as unmerited, undeserved divine favor. What is your understanding of mercy?
Oh, that's a beautiful explanation, actually. I really like to think about mercy that way, that this is the love that I do not deserve. So I'm quite aware of who I am and about my weakness, my sins, and that I betrayed Jesus so many times in my life. And I'm continuously amazed that he loves me the way I am. And knowing that I will cause him pain again and again and disappoint him again and again. But what's even more beautiful with the whole idea of mercy, that God is never disappointed with me. That he simply takes me as I am and being the same always, the merciful Father. And I really, really love the reflection of John Paul II on mercy. He, in his encyclical, he wrote my favorite sentence about mercy, who always... let me try to express it well in English.
Yes.
Goes deeper, deeper than the layers of evil, which are very visible in us. You know, all the weaknesses,
yes.
what's bad, what's ugly, what's weak, it's very clear and visible, especially for those who really know us. But mercy goes deeper than that and searches for what's beautiful and good in other people. So that's it.
Well, and that's the Father's heart. The Father searches through our misery, through our less than moments, and says, you know, my commitment toward you is still the same. My purpose toward you has not changed. Sister Gaudia, you know, some people might think, well, you know, she's a nun, so I can see where God would be merciful towards her because she's devoted her life to God and to Jesus. But God says this, the loving Father says this to all his creation. There's no exception, whether you're in a habit or whether you're a pope or whether you're an everyman or an everywoman. God says, my mercy is extended to you in just the same amount, isn't it?
Oh, of course. And even, you know, following my saint sister, Sister Faustina, you know, she used to write that that the sinners, they have greater right to the merciful heart of the Father. It is simple comparison. If you have kids, and like five of them, let's say, and one of the five is really, really naughty. This is how would you express?
Yes, naughty, you know, like, right. Yes.
So probably you will pay more attention to the naughty one. You will spend more time with him. You will show him more love than to the others, because the others, they can handle their life well.
Right.
Somehow they manage. They can face their reality and it's okay. But the one, the weak one, he needs your love more than the others. So in a way, you can say that the weak ones, the sinners, the Yes, they have the, they are the first ones whom God wishes to show his mercy, and his mercy is very touched, you know, his merciful heart is
right.
directed towards them, you know, like faith is focused on them.
Exactly.
Primarily.
And to your point, I mean, that's what Jesus said, that he would leave the 99 for the one, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And I love this part of the Bible where we have three parables. And in first, Jesus shows that he picks one from 100.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the next parable about the woman who lost her money, right?
Yes.
So there's
searches
like
everywhere
10.
For that one,
yeah.
that one little, yes,
but
that one penny.
Little,
yeah.
One from 10.
Yes, right.
And then there is the merciful father, so one out of two.
Yes.
So, like showing more and more intense focus on this very one, which is lost, which is weak. But God is always very interested with that very one.
Yes, exactly. Well, Sister Gaudia, as you mentioned, Sister Faustina, as well as Pope John Paul II, who are now both saints, both came from Poland, where you came from. And so there is a special connection with divine mercy. I mean, this was the message of divine mercy for both these Polish saints. And
yeah.
the face of mercy, which comes to a conclusion on Sunday, November the 20th. Like all conclusions, it's like a baccalaureate, which speaks not only of a conclusion, but of a beginning. It's stepping out, and now that we're aware of the face of mercy, or come to become aware of it, it's to live it out, not only in understanding there is that divine connection with God the Father and ourselves, but also with one another in extending mercy one to another. Is that right?
I think it's very natural if we actually meet the merciful God, merciful Father, who's really, you know, if we give him the chance to show us mercy, because he's
yes.
always there to show us mercy. Simply we, you know, build so many walls around us, and we try to secure our lives by ourselves. And
right.
so he kind of cannot really show how much he cares and how much he loves.
Right.
But if we just give him the chance, and we are suddenly amazed with the goodness of God, it comes naturally that we start to reflect his mercy towards other people.
Well, Sister, sadly, we're out of time. We've been talking with Sister Gaudia Skas. She is featured in The Face of Mercy. It's a new Knights of Columbus documentary that tells the personal stories about the impact of God's mercy on people's lives. It'll be airing on ABC affiliates nationwide as we conclude the Year of Mercy on Sunday.
This MultiView special report is brought to you by Intel. According to the Consumer Technology Association's Holiday Retail Outlook Study, a record 68% of Americans plan to buy tech gifts this holiday season. With laptops at the top of holiday wish lists, new devices powered by Intel's 7th-gen Core processors are bound to be among this year's favorites. 7th-generation Intel Core-based systems were built for the immersive Internet, providing premium 4K Ultra HD entertainment and 360-degree video. They're faster than ever, delivering richer visuals for gaming on the go, facial login, long battery life, and much more. Scott Massey, Intel spokesperson.
This holiday season, Intel is powering the thinnest, lightest, and most powerful devices ever. Today's PCs are enabling new, amazing experiences, making now the best time to buy a new PC.
Whether it's a 2-in-1, notebook, mini PC, gaming system, or all-in-1, there is an Intel-powered device for everyone this holiday season. For more information, visit Intel.com.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-808-5181. 800-808-5181. 800-808-5181. That's 800-808-5181.
You know about RVs, you've heard about bunkers, but surviving is not recreation, and man wasn't made to live underground. Introducing Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional off-the-grid survival bug-out house that's mobile, well-equipped, and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Go to survivalistcamps.com to learn more. That's survivalistcamps.com, providing your basic needs to survive. Survivalistcamps.com.
People who can afford a LASIK procedure sure are lucky. Imagine being able to throw away your contacts and glasses. Imagine waking up tomorrow with 20/20 vision. Too bad everyone can't afford LASIK. Well, guess what? There's a company that agrees with you. TLC Laser Eye Centers is now offering great prices on high-quality LASIK to make it affordable for everyone. That means you get the latest FDA-approved all-laser LASIK technology for less than what others charge. And if you call right now, we'll schedule a free appointment so you can discover if LASIK is right for you. Results may vary. Call 1-800-933-1427. Even better, if you're one of the first 100 callers, ask about an extra $400 off your all-laser LASIK procedure. That's $200 off per eye. We've already performed over 2 million procedures. Let us help you. Discover how you can get the quality LASIK experience you deserve for less than what others charge. For your free appointment, call 1-800-933-1427. 1-800-933-1427.
Are you retired or facing retirement and you're afraid your income is going to be less than you'd like? I'm Pharmacist Keith. Dr. Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, and I want to show you a low-cost way to create your own business, working around your current schedule, creating extra income that will last for years to come by joining Dr. Wallach's crusades, spreading his message of better health. To learn more, visit radio.recordedvideo.com. That's radio.recordedvideo.com, radio.recordedvideo.com, or call 866-257-3105 for a recorded message.
Every single day, promoting truth. Bill Martinez live.
Show the mercy shown to you. Gifts of kindness to renew. Love from heart that's deep and true. Oh, children come.
Bill Martinez live.
Back, America. Bill Martinez here. For more information on the show, you want to go to BillMartinezLive.com and you want to get involved in the conversation. You've got something to say. You want to drop me an email. Comes to me direct. NSA approved, I will tell you. Bill@BillMartinezLive.com. Well, the Knights of Columbus are celebrating the conclusion of the Year of Mercy in a new documentary that is airing on ABC come Sunday, November the 20th. It is titled The Face of Mercy. This new Knights of Columbus documentary that tells personal stories about the impact of God's mercy on people's lives. Narrated by actor Jim Caviezel, the documentary draws on the history of divine mercy. It was propelled onto the world stage by two Polish saints, Sister Faustina and Pope John Paul II. It lives on today in this year's extraordinary Jubilee Year of Mercy announced by Pope Francis. With us right now to talk about it is David Nalieri. He is the writer, director, Emmy-nominated documentary film writer and producer whose body of work is just immense. And it is such a blessing to have David on with us to talk about this movie that will be airing on Sunday, The Face of Mercy. David, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you, sir?
Hi, it's great to be with you. Thank you so much for that introduction.
How much fun, I mean, for you to work on this project, huh?
It was remarkable. Yeah, it was really remarkable. We set out to discover where we could find the face of mercy in the contemporary world. So I had the chance to travel to Poland, walk a little bit in the footsteps of John Paul II. And I think even had a greater impact on me was covering some of these remarkable stories we told in the film. So we tried to profile some incredible individuals, people like Immaculée Ilibagiza, the survivor of the 1994 Rwandan Holocaust, who forgave the men who killed their entire family. Detective Stephen McDonald was a New York City police officer. In 1986, he was shot, paralyzed, now travels the country giving talks about forgiveness and reconciliation. And so we profiled about five different remarkable people. So when you get a chance to spend time with people like that who really have been transformed by the love of Jesus Christ and and living that message of mercy, it has a profound impact on you. So you always grow from working on documentary films and the people you encounter, and this project certainly was no different.
Well, I imagine you felt like at times you were on hallowed ground, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. It was quite remarkable being in Poland at the Sanctuary of Divine Mercy in Krakow, where this image of divine mercy that we explore in this film, and which many of your listeners, when they conjure up an image of Jesus, it's likely it may be drawn from that divine mercy image just because it's been spread around the world so much. And it's a painting of Jesus that was born out of the visions of Saint Faustina in the Catholic tradition. And and so have been able to travel to some very holy places, such as the Sanctuary of Divine Mercy, where this image, the revelations of St. Faustina, were born, and where John Paul II, as a young man living under Nazi-occupied Poland, would travel to and pray on a daily basis, kind of ties together the whole story and makes you realize how, as they say, God can write straight with crooked lines.
Exactly. Unless you have had a confrontation with mercy, which clearly Pope John Paul II, Sister Faustina, so many others have, have felt that divine connection with the Father's heart and his mercy, you don't quite understand it. So how do you communicate that with people who need to understand God's mercy?
Yeah, that's what we tried to do in the film. And we tried to show through these people's biographies how they are touched in a very powerful way by the mercy of God. And I'll just give you one example. We profiled in the film Fr. Matthew Desmy. And he was formerly Grant Desmy, a huge star in the Oakland A's system. And in 2009, he was the MVP of the Arizona Fall League, and he was being talked about as the next big superstar in Major League Baseball. And he decided after that to actually stop playing baseball and become a monk. He's now a Norbertine monk in Southern California. Oh. And he has a huge devotion to divine mercy, to Saint Faustina. Mm-hmm. And what mercy taught him was, growing up being a baseball player, he always felt as though he had to achieve for God, for others, for the coaches, mm-hmm. for the managers, for the other players. So it was all about running fast and having a high batting average and performing well in the big games. And he translated that to his faith. And so we always felt as though he was failing because of the reality of sin. And it was through the reading of Scripture and St. Faustina, the life of John Paul II, that he started to reframe his mentality in terms of realizing that ultimately God loves us for us. His love is more powerful than the lure of sin. And that changing of his mindset really transformed his life and led him to want to give his life to God as a priest. So there's many different ways. We don't all experience a murder in our family and forced in one instant to try to deal with mercy towards a sinner. There's ways to discover mercy in an everyday life. And I think
exactly.
The best way to summarize is really a deepening awareness of God's love for us and how his love for us is more powerful than sin.
I had a conversation with Sister Gaudia earlier, David, and who's featured in your documentary as well. And we talked about mercy being the unmerited favor of God, as some would understand. What have you come to understand and appreciate about the face of mercy and what mercy represents in your life?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to define it. The fact that it's not something we can earn. Mm-hmm. And so it's not something we go out and say, oh, we want to, you know, acquire this mercy, and what can I do to try to achieve that, like we do in our everyday life. This is quite, something quite different, and it's really achieved, you know, on our knees with a spirit of humility. Mm-hmm. And a spirit of, think of, understanding God's love for us, and letting a deepening understanding of that love seep through us as a being. And I think a lot of times in our, you know, in our side here in America, where we're get up and go, and we have a strong work ethic, and, you know, we pride ourselves on the long hours at the office and setting up a whole series of to-do lists to achieve our aims. This is something totally different, and it's something that we can all grow in, and it's about humility. It's about confessing our sins to God or to a priest, and really being able to be humble and accepting God's love, and accepting our own weaknesses, really, and realizing God loves us despite our weaknesses. And I think, you know, in our journey to have a deepening understanding of the mystery of God's love and mercy, that's an area that we can all grow in. And I think over the past year working on this project and having a lot of discussions with someone a lot wiser than me, like Sister Gaudia, who you just spoke to, it helped me grow in that awareness.
Well, as Sister Faustina and John Paul II reflected, now saints, what they reflected and reminded us of, that you can't give something that you yourself don't have. And if you have God's mercy and the infilling of God's mercy, then you're able to do what God's called you, and that is to be merciful, to be the reflection of the Father's face and the Father's glory, to extend mercy to the rest of his creation, because we all are falling short, and we miss it in our humanity. And God understood that, and he's merciful towards us so that we can extend his mercy to others, right?
That's absolutely true. Couldn't say it better myself, and I think we have another great example of that in Pope Francis, who's very much been a pope of mercy. And I think it's a great witness to everybody. They have these penitential services in the Vatican, and we see Pope Francis sometimes on television going to confession, confessing his sins, the message being that we're all sinners, we're all in need of God's mercy. And I think he's really helped raise an awareness of that. And I think by calling for this Jubilee Year of Mercy, which inspired us to make our film, he's really put an emphasis on the need for us to be a merciful church.
Exactly.
And not just in idea, but also in practice. So to live that mercy. And there's many different ways we can do that, but I think Pope Francis is encouraging us to find the people on the margins, on the peripheries, the people who feel rejected by society, ranging from the unborn to the disabled or the elderly, to the poor, to the infirm, to those downtrodden, and to show them the love of Christ. And I think Pope Francis has really had a remarkable effect on the church with that call for mercy. And hopefully our film can play a small role in and help further that as well.
It's titled The Face of Mercy, narrated by actor Jim Caviezel, from Passion of the Christ fame, of course. The new Knights of Columbus documentary, airing on ABC affiliates nationwide on Sunday, November the 20th, as the conclusion, as we celebrate the conclusion of the Year of Mercy. Our guest, David Nolier, has been with us. David, congratulations on the deck on the documentary. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
My name is Stephen Holstein. In my 20s, I abused stimulants and anabolic steroids to the point where my adrenal glands were shot. I suffered from extreme fatigue and an inability to handle stress. For over 6 years, I have been taking adrenal supplements including herbs, glandulars, vitamin C, and vitamin B5. All these supplements did was treat the symptoms and produced only minimal results. Now, just after 1 month on Synergy One and ADR Medics, I truly feel rejuvenated. I have never felt such relaxation before from any adrenal supplement as I did just 10 minutes minutes after taking ADR Medics. I then noticed Synergy One made me wake up rested and with much more energy. No more hungover, groggy feeling upon arising. I had almost considered going to another country for stem cell therapy as a last resort, but now I truly feel rejuvenated on Synergy One and ADR Medics.
Success happens with synergistic nutrition. Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
This is Ben Gordon, and if your teeth are...